Welcome to Your Money Today, a unique look at financial, geopolitical, and other news relevant to you. For 45 years now, your host, Chris Temple, has provided his one-of-a-kind insights and advice on the markets and on our world. Whatever the subject, he calls them like he sees them. Roll up your sleeves with Chris as we get into today's program.
Welcome back, everybody. The first episode of Your Money Today, actually, in a few weeks or so since I did my precious metals related one. I've been on everybody else's podcasts and platforms, it seems, again these days. But I'm going to do a solo act tonight again, and necessarily so, because imminently, when he is sworn in, probably this coming week, Kevin Warsh is going to take the helm as the 17th chairman of the Federal Reserve. And he comes in at a time that is going to be very thankless, no matter what he does, pretty much. His hands are going to be tied starting out. He certainly is not going to be able to go in there right away and start cutting interest rates. In fact, the opposite is a lot more possible, as you've probably been hearing from me and others in a recent past. I'm going to play you what I think is one of the better and more succinct clips that I think honestly portrays what Warsh intends to do as Fed chairman, what regimen he wants to bring to the central bank. And this is only from last spring, so it's barely a year old. He repeated a lot of these things in his confirmation hearing. But before I get to that, just to lay the table, you know, some of you have heard in the past, and I've circulated a few of these things on social media in recent weeks. In modern times, more often than not, new Fed chairs are greeted by maybe not a full-blown crisis, although Greenspan faced it with the 87 stock market crash. Bernanke faced it with the 2008 crash. Powell himself a little bit less so when he was sworn in the spring of 2018, but as the year was going on, he was in a controversy over trying to raise interest rates and didn't make the White House happy, and then started to break things in the market, which forced him to go the other direction. Warsh is coming in now, and keep this in mind when I play the clip of him in an interview from early last year, early 2025. He's coming in at a time when everything he says he's against has been done in spades already by the Powell Fed and created a terrible mess that now he is going to be presiding over. Hence, of course, the cartoon you see that I've shared a few other instances recently where he's going to be caught even more than Powell in the weeks and months ahead between the bond market vigilantes on one hand and a credit crisis and weakening economy on the other. He's going to choose the first early on, and then later he's going to have to choose the latter. And I'm going to explain the food chain of how that, I see, is going to happen. But the extremes that we've seen, we've got a record, almost everywhere you look, record valuation, or we might say overvaluation on Wall Street. That has been caused by largely Jerome Powell being one of the more irresponsible Fed chairs really in history. I mean, President Trump is famously, like he does with so many people and with the Thomas Masseys and the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world, he can't criticize someone with substance. It's name calling, it's bullying and stuff like that. Of all the things he should have been criticizing Powell for, he seldom did. He wants what he wants, like a kid. He wants low interest rates and even more bubbles on Wall Street. He's going to get quite the opposite early on, I'm here to tell you, under Kevin Warsh. But we've got those bubbles on Wall Street. You'll hear Warsh talk about the Fed having too big a presence via quantitative easing. We've got more of that. Jerome Powell has presided in his 8 years as chairman. He has presided over adding something in the neighborhood of $17 or $18 trillion to the national debt. He started, finally, a couple or 3 years ago to reduce the Fed's balance sheet, but that's gone up by $300 billion, again, since late last year, something Warsh says he's against. Part of that has been necessary, as I've been telling you since late last year. Private credit, a lot of real estate funds, a lot of vehicles that are dependent on all of this goosing of easier credit of recent years, they're starting to crack. I mean, you can go from all the way at the bottom of the food chain, all the way up to Goldman Sachs itself, which some people call government Sachs. There's hardly a bigger institution that is intricately joined at the hip with the federal government. They even have had trouble with redemption requests recently. And across the board for months now, you've had private credit, real estate, commercial real estate, all kinds of funds have either slowed down or stopped redemptions because liquidity is becoming a bigger and bigger problem, along with credit quality. And again, that's because too darn much credit was made available under the regime of Jerome Powell. So what has all of that done? You know, Powell, because he goosed the money supply so much, and I've said this a million times, I don't need to repeat it endlessly, but we've seen inflation again recently reaccelerate. That was already happening before the war in Iran started. Now the rise in oil prices is going to make it considerably worse. We had a 3.8% year-over-year print on CPI in the last week. Producer prices up at a 6% year-over-year clip. The next CPI print is going to be 4% plus. Everything going in the wrong direction. And look, Jerome Powell himself said that his view of a neutral federal funds rate is if the federal funds rate is 1% above the inflation rate. Now we're going in the direction of 1% less than the inflation rate. So we have negative real rates again, hardly anything that's tightening about that, really, when you get right down to it, along with the balance sheet going up again. And look, something's got to give. And I believe that when all is said and done, Warsh, and I'll explain this in a minute after I play this clip coming up, Warsh is going to either raise rates or sit back and allow high oil prices and some dominoes starting to fall in credit markets do his work for him. And maybe in the end, because we're so far out over our skis, give us kind of a mini 2008. And then later, and I'll get back to this, he'll be able to cut rates from a better position. Because right now, and everybody knows this, everybody has said this, and he knows it himself, many of the members of the Fed Board of Governors and the voting members have said it themselves, no way right now, with inflation rising, too much froth in the markets, the bond market vigilantes, they're not going to allow any easing in policy. They want to see this guy come in and immediately act as if he's not, as Pocahontas Warren from Massachusetts said, President Trump's sock puppet, but he's going to look at the landscape and say, okay, this has gone too far and we need some medicine, we need a little bit of pain. You know, you hear President Trump say we got to have high oil prices, short-term pain for the long-term gain of Iran not having its phantom nuclear weapons and so forth. Well, we're going to start hearing the same thing from Kevin Warsh. It's not going to make the president happy. And one of the things that's going to be comical is that when he attacks Warsh early on, even more vociferously than he attacked Jerome Powell, especially if the markets unravel and Warsh is not there the first 30 seconds to cut rates and prop the markets right back up. So before I get into any more of what I see near term under the Warsh Fed, I want to play this clip. Again, it's from just a little over a year ago. And I'm going to dissect a few things, come back to a few of his comments, but I think it fairly lays out what this man's views are. And I love where he refers to himself as a practical monetarist and says practical monetarism is what we need. He's absolutely right. When he was governor way back, 15, 18 years ago, whatever it was, he was very much of that view. I don't know that that view has changed. The circumstances may have to force him to soften it. But, listen to what he says, and we'll come back to this.
That will make matters worse.
Yes, well, this might upset part of your audience, Peter. So this is a trigger warning. This is what one people like you and I do on campus. I believe this administration inherited a mess, a fiscal and monetary mess. And it is incumbent on the administration to get out of it. No one said it would be easy. We didn't get into this mess overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight. To make the numbers you said somewhat easier, I think, to understand. We were paying about $1 billion in interest expense every day the day before COVID. We're now paying more than $3 billion per day in interest expense. None of that's going to strengthen the military or help the least well-off among us. That is being squandered away. So what do I suggest? As you pointed out, and as you and I have discussed, but I'm not sure the economics profession believes this, there are two monetary policy instruments. One is setting of interest rates,
right,
and the other is this money we keep talking about. We call it QE, we call it the central bank's balance sheet. If we would run the printing press a little quieter, we could then have lower interest rates. Because what we're doing right now is we have all this money that's being flooded into the system, which causes inflation to be above target. That's the $7 trillion balance sheet you're talking about, an order of magnitude larger than when I joined the Fed. And at the same time, you have another monetary policy instrument, and that's interest rates. They don't work perfectly together. They're not perfect substitutes for each, but they're both monetary policy. And too many that are in the central banking business say, no, 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 that balance sheet has nothing to do with monetary policy. Well, if it did when you were growing it, it should have something to do with the conduct of monetary policy when it's going the other direction. I think we have to be honest about these two instruments. And because I believe that growing the real economy is the more important piece for revenue, for fairness, for efficiency and growth, because you have higher inflation caused by the bigger balance sheet, we want to shrink that. We can't do it overnight. We want the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve to come to some accord, much like the Treasury and the Federal Reserve came to in 1951. Who's responsible for what? Who's going to be managing interest rates? The Federal Reserve. Who's going to be handling fiscal accounts? The Treasury Department. We have blurred these lines about who's responsible. And when a president comes to power, his Treasury Secretary should be responsible for as the fiscal authority, instead of blurring that over to the Federal Reserve, which only brings politics to the Federal Reserve. And I would say interrupts their normal, ordinary course. In my judgment, we should be shrinking the central bank balance sheet, taking the Fed out of these markets unless and until there's a crisis. And in so doing, you'd have less inflation that way. You and I might call that a practical monetarism. I think that's what our intellectual heirs might be thinking about, intellectual teachers might be thinking about. And in so doing, you might actually be able to pull off lower interest rates, which matter more to the real economy than the balance sheet.
All right.
Okay, a lot there. I'm not going to try and get into all of it in a lot of detail right now because I'll confuse you and maybe even me in the process somewhat. But a couple of things first should be glaring. If you can push aside all of the partisan rhetoric surrounding Warsh, push aside all of the rants of the president on monetary policy and what he wants, and understand two things. Number one, a lot of the chatter around Warsh is that, oh, he's going to come in as President Trump's man and want to lower interest rates right away, but you know, there's already been a clear sign from the last couple of meetings, last meeting of Powell especially, as we've already discussed days ago, of a lot of members thinking that, hey, we might have to tilt toward raising rates. We might not be able to lower rates. I think pretty quickly people are going to wake up to the fact that if anything, it's going to be some members of the board that are going to have to hold back Warsh from pushing for rate hikes sooner rather than later. Number two, this guy, and look, I said a minute ago before I played that recording. Here's a guy who believes in practical monetarism. His record is replete with this. He fancies himself, I believe, as a modern day Paul Volcker. He's coming into a regimen which he has been very critical of. The Fed went too apeshit on printing money, quantitative easing. Powell created 35% or 40% of all the U.S. dollars ever brought into being inside of about 2.5 years with the excuse of COVID. This guy, in the way he has done it today, has been as destructive or more to the monetary framework of the U.S. as Arthur Burns was under Richard Nixon. And that's going to be, as the history is written on Powell, that's going to be one of the main takeaways of what Powell has done, the damage he has done. So practical monetarism sounds nice, but you're not going to come in right now when we've got pushing $40 trillion in debt and be able to fix all of this all, you know, right away. So the question is, first off, looking at the math, which has been screaming for a retrenchment of all of the bubbles, all of the froth, first off. Secondly, now a Fed chairman who has correctly pointed out that it's, you know, it wasn't the Putin price hike, it wasn't this, it wasn't that, it's not even the oil situation now. He has very squarely and very correctly pointed to the Fed, just like the late Milton Friedman famously said, that, you know, inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. It's the Fed's fault. He knows this. He has said this, that we have the level of inflation we do because the Fed printed too much money, they accommodated too much debt by being a buyer of last resort of Treasury debt, and he wants to change that. Now, again, how do you change that? Now we're up to $40 trillion in debt, and you need ever more debt just to keep everybody afloat. That's something we'll get to at the end of this discussion. But first off, I want to read something to you from one of the best and smartest people that I follow about what Warsh is facing. And in the broader context of this geopolitical chess game that's going on right now, you know, President Trump just came back from China. I loved what one of the talking heads on Fox News said right after that, which at least was half honest, intentionally or not. He said this was the vibes summit. You know, we all had good vibes, all the pomp and circumstance, but when all is said and done, relatively little was accomplished. We still had the Iran war, no help from China. We still have Taiwan as a sticking point. We still have rare earths hanging over our head. We're holding some chips over their head. And all of this, again, against the backdrop of global debt, globally exploding money supplies, which is not going to end well, which is overdue for retrenchment. So this is the whole backdrop, and I want to read this to you because guaranteed this is a lot of Warsh's thought process. I'm going to quote, "The real geopolitical question is whether the U.S. actually wants to cut early and relieve pressure on the rest of the world while it is trying to preserve dollar dominance. Because Fed cuts do not only help American borrowers. They weaken the dollar, ease global dollar funding stress, lower pressure on emerging market debt, reduce the commodity burden for energy importers, support foreign currencies, and give rival economies breathing room. In a multipolar flight over capital flows, trade settlement, reserve assets, and monetary power, that is not a small concession. The alternative is darker, but more consistent with how the system works. The U.S. can hold policy tight and let an external catalyst do the work. An energy shock, global slowdown, the dollar shortage, or demand destruction event can force capital back into treasuries without the Fed having to rescue the world first. That hurts the U.S. economy too, but it also cools commodity demand, lowers inflation expectations, brings a bid back to long-duration treasuries, eases mortgage pressure, and gives the Fed more cover to cut later without looking like it surrendered to inflation. That is the key. A global growth scare helps the Fed cut more later because the bond market does part of the easing for them first. If oil rolls over eventually, long yields fall, inflation expectations soften, and capital runs back into dollar assets, the Fed can then cut into falling market interest rates instead of fighting a bond revolt. So the real question is not simply whether the Fed cuts. It is whether the U.S. eases pressure for the world now or waits until the world's pain restores demand for U.S. paper and gives the Fed permission to cut from a position of strength." That's the end of that quote. I wholeheartedly believe that Warsh is not, he said this, and the circumstances are going to compel this, he is not, at this point in time, going to give in to the bond vigilantes. Or I'm sorry, he is not at this point in time, I should say, forgive me, going to thwart the bond vigilantes. Look at what happened to long-term interest rates last week. Actually, all across the curve. The two-year yield shot well above 4%. That's pricing in, it was early this year. The market was pricing in two rate cuts. Now the market is pricing in two 25 basis point rate hikes in the coming several months. The 30-year bond is well over 5%. The 10-year note is 4.6%, rounding it off at week's end last week. And that is the bond market calling the newly minted Fed chairman on the carpet and saying, what are you going to do about this? Because that is the vote of the bond market, that he is not going to get control over this right away, that he is going to continue to let inflation run hot and kind of twiddle his thumbs and hope for one of these external events pulls the rug out from under the global economy, and that's what slows down inflation, which eventually is going to happen. So the bias, I think, is going to accelerate. It's only been crawling in this direction. And as I said with my buddy Michael Fox after the last Fed meeting, you know, Powell, I think fittingly, he ended his term as chairman in his last press conference with probably the worst example of mumbo-jumbo and self-contradictory nonsense coming out of his mouth. The worst example for present purposes was when he claimed that he doesn't see any sign, I'm paraphrasing, of inflation expectations getting out of hand in the markets. That's demonstrably false, because that's why interest rates are screaming higher. It's why consumer sentiment just hit an all-time low, in part because consumers are feeling the pinch of inflation that is a much worse situation than what he claims it has been. On that subject, I think about the only thing I would quibble with in that quote, otherwise excellent, very prescient, as I said, is the idea that cutting interest rates right now would help consumers. I don't believe that's the case necessarily. You got to remember the distinction between what drives short-term policy rates and what drives long-term market rates. And I said this before in warning that the Fed was reopening Pandora's box of inflation when the Fed was cutting interest rates again late last year, which in retrospect it should never have done. And now Warsh is going to be left holding that worst bag of inflation reaccelerating. Many of you, I'm sure, I've shared it numerous times, have seen the overlay of inflation in the 1970s with what it is right now. And Arthur Burns infamously let his foot off of the brake for a while in the 70s to help the Nixon's re-election effort and to try and help the economy, try and soften a blow from the Arab oil embargo. And inflation had been coming down a bit, but as soon as he relented, it accelerated and became worse in the latter part of the 70s than it had been before. That's the road that we're on right now. And what the bond market is sniffing out, and this is why interest rates have gone up, it's why the bond market vigilantes are full-throated right now in their rebellion against treasuries, what they see is that Kevin Warsh has to do something substantial to demonstrate that he does not want inflation to get back on the loose again and go back to what it was 3 or 4 years ago. Now, the irony is that if, for example, at the next meeting, this isn't going to happen, I don't think, but at the next meeting, the one that he will be the first under his chairmanship, if the Fed were to raise short-term interest rates, you would see the long end come down. That's what usually is more beneficial to consumers. The opposite is what we're seeing now, is that the Fed has got the federal funds rate now too low, less than the rate of inflation, which is newly accelerated. And that's why mortgage rates have gone back up along with other long-term interest rates. So that's how you need to realize how these things play together. Yes, part of the reason why long-term rates would come down is that the market would be scared in thinking that Warsh is not going to be the sock puppet for Trump and is going to raise rates and cause a recession. All right, may or may not happen. That's going to be nature taking its course eventually anyway. He's not going to change the trajectory of that necessarily, or the outcome. He may change the timing somewhat. So this is going to be interesting in the near term. And I think that, again, as I alluded to a minute ago, Warsh sees as his imperative fixing the relationship between the Fed and the Treasury. I'll come back to that toward the end in just a few minutes. He sees it as getting expectations re-anchored for inflation. He wants to be able to prosecute this practical monetarism that he commented on. And all of those things coming near term, folks, what that means, bottom line, and I'll be sharing this with our paid members at the National Investor imminently again as we further change our asset allocation, the handwriting is on the wall. And I don't care what it is, any asset, risk asset, commodity, otherwise, that has been dependent on expectations of rate cuts, further easing, the stock market continuing to go to the moon, lack of recession, all these things. We're going to see these things unwind. And I think as that commentator that I quoted a few minutes ago said, part of this is, and even though this is not the long-term game plan necessarily of the U.S., they need to shore up dollar funding. They need to shore up the dollar's role in the world, even though it's going to continue to diminish. You're going to see the dollar move higher early on during Warsh's tenure, all else being equal. And I think you're going to see that do, and I really do think we're going to have a miniature version of 2008 imminently, likely before the election. I don't think it can be put off. And whether the timing is off or not, the math is not. So keep that in mind as you're planning your portfolio. Realize that the stock market is an accident waiting to happen. And even with the corrections in some commodities and some commodity stocks, and I've said this in other contexts recently, this is why I've been ambivalent on metals, even precious metals. They're as likely as not to get worse before they get better. So you need to keep your overall allocations down, focus only on individual company stories, etc. I'm not going to repeat all that now. I spent a lot of time on that in the last 3 or 4 weeks. So as I wind this down, folks, Kevin Warsh's game plan, I think, in its pattern, is going to resemble actually what the late Paul Volcker did when he came in the late 70s. He had runaway inflation, and he really slammed on the brakes, shot it. Interest rates won't go up as much. I'm not saying we're going to see that. But the pattern is he's going to be a tough guy early on, regain some credibility for the Fed on inflation, and that is going to, in the near term, cause a lot of markets to backtrack, to lose a lot of the air. They've had some areas worse than others in the recent past. That's going to be tempered, I think, somewhat by the sheer volume of the debt that we have right now and what needs to be refinanced as well. But that is the game plan generally that Warsh has. So that is why near term I am ever more bearish on the stock market. I've not been, timing wise, I've been saying this obviously for some months now, but we're going to be doubling down on that as far as our portfolio allocation. We still are going to have a balanced portfolio. You know, you don't take 100% of your portfolio and go short, otherwise you get killed. You would have in a recent past. We're still somewhat slightly net long recently, but that's going to change. The other thing that we're going to be looking at too is maybe even having some hedges on our remaining positions in commodities and commodity stocks and things like that, because as much as I like a lot of good stories for the long term, I don't see much that's going to be spared what's happening right now. So that is my overall market outlook right now. What's going to be interesting in the wake of this, and hopefully if Warsh can get a handle on this and convince the markets that he's more of a serious actor, the damage might not be as bad as if this would be allowed to continue and we had a bigger accident. So that remains to be seen. The bigger thing policy-wise, and this is going to be interesting to watch, and it's not going to be Warsh's immediate mandate. His immediate mandate is to get inflation expectations back under control and let people know he is not Trump's sock puppet. And again, that's going to be net bearish for most asset classes. But afterwards, what do we do? You know, what does he do to bring back, as the case may be, a more sound game plan, his practical monetarism, so to speak, to the Federal Reserve? And I've talked about this, including after President Trump first nominated him, because there's a couple of wild cards here that regrettably, and I said this before, really weren't talked about in his confirmation hearing in front of the Senate Finance Committee. Not that, you know, I mean, collectively, all of the different senators on that committee don't have the IQ of an average peon, you know, human being in a real world, let alone what you would expect from senators. So in the end, it's not a shock that we didn't hear about this. But I want to talk about it because this is how he thinks he is going to have his own second act, kind of like Paul Volcker did, and bring about a significant transformation of how the Fed operates. I've talked about that enough in the past with Paul Volcker. I'm not going to repeat it now, except to say again that Paul Volcker is remembered for the wrong thing. He should not be remembered for whipping inflation as he did, the ways he did it supposedly back in the late 70s and through the early 80s, as much as he should be remembered for completely upending the relationship between the financial economy and the organic economy on Main Street afterwards, creating the wealth effect and all that kind of thing. And that is about the time, of course, that President Ronald Reagan reappointed him, for exactly that reason, to help enable Reaganomics, which basically had as its foundation accelerating debt, not decelerating debt. So what is Kevin Warsh's act going to be after he manages the mess and the bubbles and everything that we have in the markets right now? Well, first of all, and this is I think the least serious and credible thing that he's talked about, he still is one of those that thinks that the actual inflation rate is overstated. He wants to use a Dallas Fed measure that would be a bit less than the core CPI figures the Fed has used. I mean, that's rearranging the deck chairs on a Titanic, and I think the markets are going to see that. I don't think that's very credible, and it's not going to be the major part of what Warsh wants to do. Aside from that, however, I found it interesting, and I hope you picked this up, during that clip I played of him from early last year, he really was good at pointing out that the Fed should not be required to cover for the fiscal profligacy of the government. He's talked about how the lines have been blurred over that. Well, of course they've been blurred because to a fair extent, the Federal Reserve has become the buyer of last resort of Treasury securities, and you can go all the way back to at least 2008 in that time frame and understand that market interest rates would have been a fair bit higher than they ended up being were it not for the fact that the Fed took on itself the role of monetizing ever-increasing debt loads and deficits and really making the whole world that unnatural. Now, that's a regimen that all across the world is changing because it's not just in the U.S. that interest rates have been surging. It's pretty much everywhere. Even now, finally, in China, where rates were low for a while, but now they're kind of levitating back out of the borderline deflation they've been in for the last year or two. But they're still way less bad. The Chinese interest rates, in case you didn't know, are a couple of points less than what they are in the U.S. But you look at the UK, Europe even, which is a dead economy, and even there, interest rates are going up just because of the levels of debt and nobody tightening their belts. Well, we'll see what happens. Warsh has discussed, and you heard him say this in this clip, that he wants to go back to the last time that the Fed and the Treasury had what they called an accord in 1951. Now, this is a little bit selective history on his part. Let me give you the quick Cliff Notes understandable version of what was going on back in those days. That was the last time the Fed and the Treasury coordinated monetary policy, and in those days it was to affect what was called yield curve control. To where, and I won't get into the details of it because I'll confuse myself, let alone you, but basically, and it's kind of like what Japan did for a long time until recently when they kind of got shoved out of it because inflation is rising in Japan, again, along with interest rates. But we're all across the yield curve. The government took a position that, okay, for 10 years, 20 years, whatever, we want Treasury yields to be X, and however much we have to manipulate the market, however much paper we have to buy to keep it at that level, that's what we're going to do. Now that, of course, was in contrast to what Bernanke's quantitative easing was when he came out with a certain amount of money that the Fed would buy of Treasuries, but you know that didn't say that interest rates would stay pegged at a certain level. That was what the U.S. government did in 1951. Why? Two reasons. Number one, that was the last time until recently that the debt-to-GDP ratio was over 100%. And that, of course, was because of all of this borrowing to fund the fighting in World War II. So the government decided, with the help and cooperation of the Fed, that they needed to keep interest rates compressed to make that more affordable and help us to grow our way out of that debt problem, which we did to some extent afterwards. Secondly, as a public policy matter, it was to allow returning GIs to buy homes, to start businesses, whatever the case may be. And that was another, you know, beneficial public policy reason why the Fed and the Treasury together wanted to compress interest rates. Kevin Warsh wants to take us back to that regimen. And there are some good things about that, honestly. Some possibly nefarious things about that. What astonished me, as far as his hearing was in front of the Senate Finance Committee, is that this is exactly, technically, legally, institutionally, the way that President Trump and or any future president will now have some indirect, at least, influence over Fed policy as a matter of law. And all of these nitwits, including Pocahontas, were too busy with the name-calling and didn't have sense enough to flesh that out and discuss that with Warsh. So we're all going to find out on the fly how this is going to work, because that is coming. That is coming. When we get through this present upheaval in the bond market vigilantes probably aren't done yet. Warsh is going to have to knuckle under to them initially, and that's going to mean bad things if you're invested in most asset classes, as I said. After the dust settles, and the Fed is in a position because of a weaker economy, maybe a global recession, lower commodity prices, less worries near term about inflation, then it's going to be roll up your sleeves time and put these policies to work and try and bring about yield curve control so that you don't have another spike in rates after that. He's also been, if you didn't know this, and again, very little, if anything, about this in his confirmation hearing, he's been a big advocate of stable coins, not cryptocurrencies. There's a distinction, which is a topic for another day. But stable coins, which will be used and looked to by the government down the road as a means to have an alternative kind of a corollary money, and I put money in quotes, to be able to paper over and enable further debt in years to come, without everything blowing up. That's, again, that's kind of a discussion for another day. So, again, these things are all going to come later. Obviously, I'll be talking about them as we go along, especially if Warsh and or any of his comrades in the Eccles building were to actually introduce these things and start talking about them half seriously. But again, mostly for present purposes, you need to understand that Warsh's inclination is not going to be to save markets if things unravel. In fact, he may even push them over the edge if he comes out early on with fairly hawkish talk. And I think that we're going in that direction. If you hadn't noticed, for all of the brickbats otherwise that have been thrown at Jerome Powell, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent recently admitted that maybe it's okay for the time being that the Fed sits on its hands and doesn't lower interest rates and adopts this wait-and-see attitude. Of course, it's with the excuse of the Iran war. We don't know how high oil is going to go. There's going to be the risk if we have a really big spike additionally in the oil price, which is possible if the president and or the Israelis restart the bombing of Iran. And we have more disruption, more supply shocks and so forth on top of the bad situation we already have. You know, I don't see Warsh necessarily raising interest rates when there's a supply shock like that. I think he's going to be inclined to let that, and this will happen to some extent, already is, let that be a form of demand destruction and economy weakening, and hopefully, in the grand scheme of things, the way he'll be looking at it, take some of the froth out of the markets, take some of the froth out of inflation expectations by lessening demand and so forth. So that's the near-term situation. However this shakes out, no easing of interest rate policy. It'll be interesting to see if Warsh even has any influence over the recent increase in the money supply and Fed intervention in repo markets out the back door through its open market operations and the other euphemisms it uses. As I said months ago, I mean, QE on a QT has already started. Several hundred billion dollars have been added back to the money supply, back to the Fed's balance sheet in, I guess, it's been like 6-7 months now, something like that. Will Warsh allow that to continue? Is he going to pull back on that or try and push for that? We'll see. But again, wrapping this up, be braced for quite a different scenario than what President Trump wants, certainly, at the Fed. And again, as I've said many times, markets who for so long have been so complacent, thinking the Fed's going to come to the rescue, they're going to lower rates and so forth. Powell didn't do it anymore in 2026. Now the talk is of rate hikes. The market is demanding rate hikes. Whether Warsh delivers them or not remains to be seen. And finally, I think some of the bearishness that should have been evident to this point is going to rear its head. You know, and as always, like I alluded to a few minutes ago, our members are going to get some enhanced guidance imminently as to how we should further rejigger our portfolios. And you know, we may be doing this in a few different steps in the weeks ahead. So if you're not already a member of the National Investor, there's a link with this podcast as to how to sign up. We've got a special offer right now for new members. And as always, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to drop me a line at chris@nationalinvestor.com. Thanks for tuning in.
We're glad you joined us today. As always, write to chris@nationalinvestor.com with your comments and questions. And be sure to visit yourmoneytoday.org if you haven't already. Sign up for our free alerts, notifications of new shows, and more. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.